Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Ruth. When Ruth was 8 years old, she sadly lost her mum to breast cancer. She later underwent genetic testing and found that she has an altered BRCA1 gene. We'll be talking about the implications of this and the impact it's had on her life. Ruth, thank you for joining me.
Hello, that's my pleasure.
So Ruth, as we just touched on in the introduction there, you sadly lost your mum when you were quite young. Could you tell us a little bit about that family history of breast cancer? I believe your nan had breast cancer as well. Is that true?
So my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 36 and passed away when she was about 42. Mm. And so she was obviously really young. And her mother, my grandma, also had breast cancer, but she developed it later on in life. She was in her 60s. And because my mum was so young and died relatively quickly, the genetics team in Manchester where she was looked after had always kept in touch with me and my family ever since she died, and that was kind of like a yearly update meeting letter we would have,
right.
And it was always just part of my life that they were involved. And I don't know if that is common anymore or if it was even commonplace then, I don't know, but they were always involved. And as I got older, they would talk to me about different things, like, you know, going on the pill at 16, because I think they thought back then it reduced the risk. Obviously things have changed, and then it was kind of left to me what I wanted to do with it, whether I wanted a test or not.
And because it was from such a young age, I guess you were always aware of it. Did you think at any point, you know, did you have anxieties that you might be at higher risk? Was that something that was made aware to you by the genetics team, or were you not sort of sure, you know, what their purpose was and why they were sort of checking in on you?
I think growing up, I knew that there was a risk to me, because they were saying, well, we think that your mum had this. They never tested her for it, but because she was so young and because your grandmother had it, that there's a potential that she's got this BRCA1 gene or BRCA2. And but I think as a teenager and young into your 20s, I think generalizing, you think that you are cliche, quite invincible. You don't consider what could happen. You're like quite in the moment, and as you should be. So I didn't really have anxiety about it at all. And I remember being 18, 19, leaving home, going to uni and thinking, I actually don't even want to know. Like, I don't want to know. If I'm going to get cancer, I'd rather just not know. In hindsight, I think I was probably quite naive to that at the time. But I definitely, as I got a bit into my 20s and I had my first son when I was quite young, I was 25. And it wasn't until then, really, that I think I realised that there's other people in the world other than me that this might impact. And so that's when I decided that I would be tested.
Would you be able to just, in your own words, kind of talk me through what it means to have a mutated gene and the effect it has on you, and how does that increase risk and things?
It's like a breast cancer gene that is mutated, which leaves me with a high risk of developing breast cancer. So there's the BRCA1 gene and the BRCA2 gene, and they both have slightly different percentages of your risk of breast cancer. My risk of breast cancer with a BRCA1 gene is about 80%, which is really high. And I think it's either the same or slightly lower with a BRCA2 gene. You're also at increased risk of ovarian cancer with both genes. So given the high risk of developing those cancers, you're generally offered a risk reducing surgery, mastectomy, and then your ovaries and your fallopian tubes to be removed. So they're the main risk factors that I'm aware of with having the BRCA1 gene. You can pass it on to your children. It's a 1 in 2 chance of passing it on. And lots of places will offer IVF gene selection. All of this for me comes down to my experience as a child losing my mum to cancer and how that shaped my life and my upbringing and who I am now, and how I just don't want that to happen to my boys. And I know, you know, anything could happen at any point, but with that information has given me almost like a sidestep around avoiding it. And that's all it was. And I don't think I experienced much anxiety leading up to being tested. And I actually don't think once I knew I wasn't, the anxiety has come as I've got older and I think actually had my risk reducing operations. I think that's where the struggle started, really, personally for me.
Yeah, it's almost like when it was just sort of conceptual, it's you can kind of put it aside, I suppose. But then when you actually start intervening and it just becomes a bigger part of your life.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you say you had your son quite young and that's what initially prompted you. Did you have hesitations then about getting tested, or was it kind of set in your mind? You're very clear about it.
I was. So he was born in the July and I got tested in the September.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I found out in the December. And I think I felt like I knew I had it. Or I'd kind of said, well, you probably have it, Ruth, so you know what you're going to do. You know you're going to have a mastectomy, because I had been given all the options before I was tested. So I knew what I would do. And once I knew, I definitely was really quite emotional about it, even though I felt like I had it. When I was told it, like the reality of it, I did find that really difficult. But I was still very clear that I would always have a mastectomy. There was no question about it. And so it was just a case of when did I want to do that? I was still relatively young. I was 25. I knew I wanted more children and that I wanted to be able to breastfeed them. So it was trying to figure out when I would go ahead with it, really, from then on.
And how did you kind of figure that out? How did you weigh those things in your mind?
Well, my second son is only 17 months younger than my first, so I literally bashed him out. And that was always like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have them close together. Mm-hmm. And then, because the breastfeeding thing was really personal to me, because I'd had quite a difficult experience with my first son. So I wanted to do it again. I wanted for it to be a better experience for me.
Yeah.
And then after I'd had my second Lucas, I went through the process of meeting with the breast surgeon. I was referred to plastic surgery. I had to have a clinical psychology input and consultation to make sure that you really are aware of what you're going to do to your body. Because for me, I chose to have a Dieppe flap operation, so where I've been reconstructed from my abdomen. So my body looks very, very different to what it did. And am I prepared for that? Am I prepared to walk through that post-operatively and how that's going to play out into my life? And so we'd done all that, but I just didn't know if I wanted another one. And so we just waited. Again, I was still under 30. I think for me, in my mind, my mum was 36. So I always felt I had a bit of time on my hands. And anyway, then I had Theo 3 years later. And Theo's now 4. And so I had my mastectomy in 2020. What a time to have mastectomy. I mean, I'm not sure that was the best choice I've ever made, but there we are. So it was all around my family. Mm. And when that was done and I didn't have a little baby to carry around, I just, it was the right time to get them chopped off essentially and reconstructed, because I didn't want it, I didn't want to leave it too long,
yeah,
to getting to that, like, because I'll be 35 in July, so I needed that done before I got to that stage in my life.
Yeah, to the age when your mum was diagnosed.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, going through having all this weighing on your mind and then actually making the decision to go through surgery and all the while having three boys at home, which I don't imagine is easy.
It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, what impact did all this, not just sort of the preparation for it, I mean, that must have taken its toll, but then actually undergoing those surgeries, how has it all affected you?
So it was a funny one because I had had all my pre-op. The waiting list for a DEP is about a year. So I'd had everything done in, well, it must have been 2019, just before everything, before COVID. Mm. So I knew I was expecting it to, maybe it was 2018, and I was expecting it early 2020. And but then I was told it wouldn't happen because everything came to a stop. And that, you know, I was all right with it. I still felt like I had time, and like I'm an intensive care nurse, so I was very busy.
Right. Goodness.
And so that whole first half of 2020 was just, I worked, my husband is a physio, so he worked, we had the boys, it was just, you know, we were just muddling through, trying to get through like everybody else. And then it was in July, I just got a phone call from the hospital saying, we can do it, we'll do it in August. Oh my God. I just was completely unprepared. I was by myself at home with the boys. And I just remember thinking, I cannot say no.
Mm.
Like, I probably was physically the best I'd ever been because I'd started doing a lot of exercise during lockdown for my mental health.
Mm.
So like peak physical fitness, I was quite like well, but I was just completely taken aback. I put it out of my mind. I wasn't expecting it. And then here I was being told, in 4 weeks, we can do your operation. Can you do it? And I was like, well, I can, but I don't know if my husband can take time off work to look after me. Mm. Because I told my work knew all about what might happen. And anyway, I said yes, because I was worried. You just didn't know how it was going to go with COVID. We didn't know whether it was going to get worse at that time or better, or if everything was going to come to a stop again. And I felt like I was given a bit of a lifeline. Anyway, it ended up being in September. So I'd had a bit of longer time to plan. And I was always really black and white about it. I'm having it done. There's no question. We'll deal with how I feel afterwards. And that is very much how it played out. Like, I had to go into the operation on my own. My husband couldn't come with me. My plastic surgeon and the team were just, they were incredible. They were very, very, like, they're caring beyond I ever expected them to be. I had my operation. I was in hospital for 3 days. And then I came home. My husband had to take 4 weeks off to look after me because you can't move, like you can't stand up straight. And I kind of look back on that time with rose-tinted glasses, I think my husband would say, because I really did rest. I didn't do anything. I couldn't really do anything. And then as life started to open up again, as he went back to work and I started to have to mobilize a bit more, start doing things more around the house, I think that's when I was like, maybe I'm not 100% okay. Maybe this is quite a big deal that I've just gone through.
Yeah.
And if you asked anybody, I think, that knows me well enough now, I still struggle to acknowledge that it's been a big deal, that it is a big operation that I've had. I think because a lot of my brain thinks, well, you've not got cancer, so you're okay. And so you've had a big operation, but you've not got cancer, so you should be fine. And I think a lot of the work I've done, I suppose, in the last year or 2 years is kind of trying to eke out why those feelings are there, and that I don't have to have had cancer for this to be a really valid thing and quite a traumatic thing to have gone through. And I remember when I was on the shoot and I was talking to Louise, the nurse, and she said a lot of the girls and guys who have got BRCA feel the same. They don't feel like breast cancer now is a support for them because they're not actually cancer like patients, but it's not, is it? She was very clear that it's for everybody who's been impacted in whatever way by cancer. I would really want people to know that, because in me acknowledging that, I definitely have, it's made my recovery easier.
That's really good to hear that you found that support somewhere. And you know, you say you haven't had breast cancer, but you've had that worry for so long, and you know, you've had that kind of hanging over you, and you know how it affects people because you lived it in losing your mum at a young age. So you've had to deal with all those psychological parts of breast cancer, even if you didn't develop breast cancer yourself, and then you went through the physical treatment. And the shoot that you mentioned there is our Fashion Targets breast cancer shoot. Just to sort of explain to people listening, so Fashion Targets breast cancer is every year we'll team up with people who have experience of breast cancer or connection to breast cancer, and team up with retailers and release special lines of clothing, which will then help raise money for Breast Cancer Now. And you're involved in that, which is partly why we're sharing your story now. And like you say, it's sometimes people with BRCA1, BRCA2 genes, other mutations, which means they're at higher risk of breast cancer, don't know that these services are out there for them. And hopefully having you as part of the campaign will sort of help raise that awareness. Can you just tell us a little bit about your time with Fashion Targets Breast Cancer and what it meant to you to kind of get involved with that and go along to the shoot, even if it was a bit overwhelming? And what it means to you to be involved with Breast Cancer Now?
I was really shocked to be asked, to be honest. I started my Instagram page after I had my mastectomy, because I found that I really couldn't find any 30-something-year-old girls with going through this. I was put in touch with a 50-year-old lady who was really helpful and told me that I'd be fine, but I didn't see pictures of her body, and I just wanted someone that I could relate to, or I could, you know, verbal blur on them and ask loads of questions like, what do I need pre-op, like what can I just couldn't find it. And so when I had it, I just started documenting it as much for me as I wanted to help someone else. Anyway, so I expected nothing from it. I've had lots of chats with people on there who have found it and asked me questions, but that's all I ever expected. And then when Breast Cancer Now, when Holly messaged me, I got back in touch with Holly and obviously said yes, because I want to help people. Like I'm a nurse, it's there, like it's ingrained. That's how my Instagram page was, to help people. And I know how I struggled since having my mastectomy and my ovaries removed, and I felt quite alone because I didn't realize that I could access Breast Cancer Now, that I could access Macmillan and all of those things. And I wanted, and I was really honoured and thankful that Holly, Breast Cancer Now, kind of identified that with the BRCA, like the BRCA community. I know a lot of us, I can't speak for everybody, but we can often feel that. And so to be able to talk about it and it not just be like, oh, Angelina Jolie's got it, like someone we can't really relate to, to be asked to do something like that, I was really surprised but really happy completely out of my comfort zone to go and do that. And then I felt completely pampered on the day. It was just really fun. I really enjoyed myself, despite what I probably looked like throughout that day. Genuinely, it was like, oh my God, how do people do this for a job? Like, they were like, smile. And I was like, okay, I just couldn't do it. I was definitely not a natural, but it's good to do things that are awkward or hard. And like I said, because from it was all of this, like talking about BRCA, talking about mastectomies, and, you know, like I'm in the surgical menopause, and that's not fun. But being vocalized, I think it's only going to help people. And through a bigger platform like Breast Cancer Now, and them getting behind people with the BRCA gene mutation and other gene mutations, then people are just going to feel more and more supported. So I had a lovely day. I felt really glamorous and had lots of fun and met some really great people. But that's just going to, you know, platform people who have got BRCA or people who have got a family history and maybe haven't, you know, or maybe I have, or make people more aware of things within their family, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. There are so many people out there who still might be unaware that gene mutations can even exist, and might not know that they do have the resources to go and get tested if their doctors believe that they might be at higher risk. So yeah, not only have you raised that awareness by taking part on the day, and you did so well, by the way. You didn't you looked like a complete natural, and we'll get to see you alongside three other models for Fashion Targets Breast Cancer, and those products will be available for sale soon. So anyone listening should go look at Dorothy Perkins and River Island to see you guys and your excellent modelling work. But another part of the campaign is just sort of boosting people's body confidence and kind of making people feel happy in their skin. And is that something that you feel was affected by your surgery?
I'm not sure with this one, because I am actually really happy with how I look.
Oh, that's brilliant news.
Yeah. I think I always struggled with how I looked weight wise. Growing up in my 20s, I never really looked the way I wanted to, but I never really put in the work to like try and change anything. And then as I got older, and I did, and I'd got myself fitter, and then it became more about what I looked physically. Genuinely, it was like, I can see that this is boosting my mental health, I'm less tired, all of those things that people are shouting from the rooftops at the moment. But when I had my mastectomy, my boobs now are smaller than they were. And for me, that has built my confidence, because I had quite big boobs before and I really wasn't ever sure how to dress them. I didn't like them to be on show. I didn't want to wear low cut tops and things like that. And so now I think I would say that I'm probably more confident because they are smaller. I'm not sure if this but this is just how I feel.
Totally. No, there is no right or wrong. That's the thing. It's so personal to everyone. And I think it's important to share the stories of, actually, I'm happier after my mastectomy, because I think sometimes the narrative is, you know, expect to not be you know, thrilled with how it looks afterwards. But some people so often say, no, I'm happier this way. And, you know, I'm very pleased with how the surgery turned out and stuff. So it's brilliant to hear that you do feel that way. That's excellent.
I am really happy. And the scars have healed really well. You wouldn't see my Dieppe scar. It is hip to hip, but because of how low it is, you can't, if I'm on the beach or in a swimming pool, you wouldn't know. Yeah. The only thing that is weird is my belly button. It looks strange because they have to cut it out and then they stitch it back in. So it looks really weird. But I'm really proud of my body. I just think it's pretty amazing that you can take fat and put it and make a pair of boobs. I just think that's really cool. And my kids think it's hilarious, but I want them to see my body for what it is, and whoever or whatever they end up as, I want them to have respect for people's bodies, because we're not like that glamour shooter, like glamour model on the front of the magazine, and that they can see that their mum is pretty strong and she's had all these operations, and doesn't matter if it's not perfect, and they think it's funny that I've got a pair of stick-on nipples. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just want, I'm glad that I can share that with them, especially having three boys. I want them to grow up acknowledging that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that people know that you can be happy. Like you said, you can be happy after your mastectomy, and that there are lots of stories out there where things have gone really badly and people have had issues with their implants or their flaps haven't taken when they've had the EPs. But luckily my story was really smooth and I didn't have any issues post-operatively. I healed really well and to the timeline physically. And I would say that I probably feel even more confident, probably the most confident physically that I've ever felt.
That's absolutely fantastic to hear. Honestly, brilliant and so wonderful to hear. And it's great that you're talking to your boys about this as well, and that you can sort of have a bit of humour around it as well. But I mean, obviously with BRCA genes as well, that may be a conversation that you want to have with your sons at some point in the future. Is that something that you've already started thinking about, or you kind of, as with yourself, you didn't want to think about it until you're a bit older? Do you have any plans for how you might approach that conversation with them?
Well, I definitely think about it. It's probably something that makes me feel pretty sad when I think about it, because I was never offered gene selection in terms of IVF, and my husband likes to say that if you were, they wouldn't be the same ones we have now. And I get that, but I don't know, maybe it's a bit too abstract for my brain. But it's just, I suppose, I think that their risks aren't exactly the same as mine, being female. And I will talk to them about it, I think, more age appropriately as they get older. They know that my mum died. They talk about, and they'll randomly ask questions about her. Mm. And they know that I've got this funny gene, and that if mummy didn't have a mastectomy, it would have made her, could have made her really poorly. But in terms of talking to them about whether I've passed it on to them, it's not something that I have broached, because I'm sure, well, it did obviously have a big impact on me growing up, knowing that mum had died and that I might have this. And they can't do anything about it till they're 18. They can't choose to be tested then, until I can't choose that for them. So I think as they become older and they're teenagers, it will be something that we will discuss with them. And as I was left by my dad and by healthcare professionals, I was given all the information. I'd do the same for them, and then they can make their informed choice, just like I did. And I have real faith in, I mean, you think about Dieppe flaps and the different changes and the research that could be down the line, and I've no doubt that there'll be more, either more testing or more awareness, and I just hope that they haven't got it. That is my hope, because it's still 50-50.
Yeah, certainly. And there's so many points that you touched on there, and I think it is, we've spoken to people before who've found out later on that they've had altered genes after they've had children, and there seems to be that kind of inherent guilt that people feel. But, and I've said this to people before, like, you couldn't have helped passing on that gene, but what you can help now is kind of furnishing your boys with the best information and kind of, you know, encouraging to take steps that you think are right. And so that's what matters now anyway. And also, I feel like we should mention your Instagram here, seeing as this is kind of what brought you to us in the first place. Where can people find you?
So my Instagram is at my mastectomy and me. And it is just my story, I suppose, from 2018 when it all kind of started, right up until now, all through my pre-op for my mastectomy, post-op, all that year afterwards, and then up until recently when I had my ovaries removed in January. And kind of, I guess that's taken a different story now, talking a bit about HRT, which seems very relevant at the moment with everything that's going on in the media. But it's just my point of view, how I feel and what I found helpful, and hopefully to help other people as well.
Yeah. And I'm sure you absolutely will help other people. It sounds like you already have. And anyone listening, you know, if they think it'll be helpful, we encourage them to go have a look. And yeah, just thank you for doing that. Thank you for being the person who, you know, there wasn't something for you, but you are making sure that you're there for other people. And that's a fantastic thing to do. So thank you for that. And yeah, thank you for talking today. It's been lovely having a chat.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Em. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.